So thank you for being here, and thank you to the other panelists. I've learned so much already, and I feel like there are some themes that hopefully I'll be able to draw on that you all presented earlier as well. So I have no relationships to disclose. I do hope that you come away with three things: understanding, being able to discuss critical elements of a virtual dental home, identifying potential members of a coalition or work group, if you're interested in implementing something like this, and evaluating the possibilities of this kind of implementation in your own state. So does anyone, I want to cover this, but I've already put it up there. Did anyone know this already about dental disease among children, that it is the most common disease? Okay. So one of the things I really want to make sure that we're understanding is that the implications for dental disease, untreated dental disease, is not just pain and infection, but also adequate nutrition. So when we're talking about children being ready to learn, speech development, high rates of absenteeism among students and parents, right, if they're taking off time from work, school performance, and social engagement. I know that when I glance around a room, one thing I always look at now is teeth. I look at who's smiling, who's not, and why, and who's not here. Okay, so just generally, 25% of U.S. children have decay in baby teeth before entering kindergarten. And by 19 years of age, 68% have experienced tooth decay in permanent teeth. The implications for this are long, they're with us for a lifetime. In California, this is some data I think of particular interest for I'm guessing all of you, is the number of school days missed in a year. My guess is this is a really low estimate still. It's not something that standard school offices ask why children aren't there. If they're just not well, they're not well. Drilling down, pardon the pun, to the reason of it being a dental issue is not often done. So similar experiences from other health issues is insurance status, whether or not a child has insurance, but also what type of insurance. So publicly funded insurance is not as often accepted by dentists. So then you have subsequently reduced access to providers. Again, transportation, like we've just heard about with rural issues, it can be very, very hard to get to a dentist, and also the hours of practice. If a family is working and being able to take off, if they're in a low-income job already, if they're working multiple jobs, it's very hard to access care on a standard dental practice's hours of practice. Dental literacy among the populations that this particular project served, but also generally, is what is the knowledge? Do people understand that dental disease can be prevented? Cultural differences, there are many cultures, especially in California, represented who have an experience of having complete dental loss by 40. It's very common. And then dental fear. So the issue of what biases we bring and what biases we put on our children or start to influence them with. So when we think about, I direct operations for a small center at the University of the Pacific, and so I always go to what are we going to do about it? And I think really fundamentally can it always go on this way? What are we going to do about it? Because the screen and refer does not work. Because you continue to have oral health providers who see the same dental disease progress year after year after year. That screen and refer does not work. So when one of the panelists talked about the IOM report, I think it was the vision, we also have two IOM reports that were addressing oral health care. And in those reports, there were several things that emerged. Recommendations related to using new technology and having community-based care, and also looking at the current workforce. Who's available to do this type of care in community settings? So in California, what we've tested is called a virtual dental home. It's an innovative system of care. It's been practiced. So for this presentation, I really focused on our elementary and preschools, but it's been practiced in numerous settings. Group homes for individuals with developmental disabilities, subacute hospitals, long-term care facilities, and community centers. So again, I'm focusing on this for schools, but really I want you to think of the big picture. So what it is, and I am not being gender biased, but I am going to say she when I refer to our dental hygienist, because all of the women we work with, or all of the hygienists are women. So the dental hygienist brings portable equipment to a school. So this particular picture that you're seeing was just an empty room on the school campus. It's an elementary school. The school free breakfast and lunch is 98%. Very, very needy community. This child was 12 years old, had never been to a dentist. The little unit you can see, it looks like a large hair dryer, is actually a portable digital x-ray unit. We use the lead drapes, but we don't need to. It's actually a very, very safe, safe technology. So let's see, this is supposed to be a video. Okay, we'll go back. It might work in a second if I dodge back in a moment. So we have this is the concept model. The idea of the virtual dental home is you have a cloud-based electronic health record. You have allied personnel on site. They're communicating using the technology that we have, telehealth actually, to care for that child on site. If a child does not need, if they don't have extensive dental disease, they can be maintained in that school setting. If they need a referral, what's more likely to happen is you have a family who's prepared to understand what's happening with their child because they've been working with the on-site oral health provider. Then you also have a dentist who's prepared to provide care at that first visit. So they've already reviewed the x-rays. They've already reviewed all the dental charting. They've seen photos. So what happens, instead of a family coming in for a consult or treatment planning, which oftentimes to families feels like nothing was done, they're able to actually provide care at that first visit because a treatment plan's in place. I never like to get down to those gold down at the bottom, which is the OR and the ER, so we'll just keep on moving. But that does happen, and we all know that. So the dental hygienist provides clinical services. So these are cleanings, x-rays, photo, charting, dental, really, really robust education. So the idea is it's not just about educating that child. It's about educating the whole community around that child. Anecdotally, we haven't done any surveys yet. I'm working on that. But anecdotally, what we hear from our school sites is that the dental IQ of the entire school goes up. So because you have an oral health provider who's talking about this, who's normalizing these discussions, and who's also asking children right after they're collecting their breakfast, make sure you swish with water so they're getting the sugars rinsed away. Little things like that can really make a difference. And then also they're supporting the referral process. They're using telehealth technology to facilitate communication with a dentist who is off-site, so at his or her clinic or dental office. Here's just a brief look at the electronic health record. So, you know, again, all of the photos, there are multiple photos taken. They can be blown up. They can be labeled so a dentist is knowing which tooth it is and where in the mouth. So here's another picture. We have practice sites all the way down to the San Diego border, the Mexico border, all the way up to the Oregon border. This is down in San Diego. Again, the school, we're with National Unified School District there. We're with LA Unified School District, Twin Rivers Unified School District, which is in Sacramento. Very, very needy school districts. But again, this is portable equipment, not easy to put not hard to put together and not hard to break down. This is the school nurse's office. So we have one nurse who's got six schools that she roams to. And so the dental hygienist schedules when that nurse is not there. So the room's empty. They've got a sink available. And the children are already familiar with that setting to go receive health services. So the idea is really about integration and integrating. I have this vision of having, sometime in my lifetime, dental hygienists having a pod of schools, similar to what a school nurse does. That it is such a reasonable patient-centric approach to care, especially considering dental disease is the most common disease among children in the U.S. But also thinking about how we work together. How does this happen effectively? So really looking at integration with the school nurse, the school counselor, teachers, and administration. I think in from my experience, is the teachers cannot be left out of this conversation. Repeat training every year at the beginning of the school year needs to occur. But all, the teachers have a close relationship oftentimes with parents. The consent forms are not easy to complete, as you mentioned. And integrating that into a system and recognizing the teachers that do really well, and also what comes back is that you have children in the class learning. They're not taking off a half day to go to a dental clinic or a whole day. They're taking off an hour from a certain class, and the dental hygienists negotiate with the teacher. So if a child is not doing well in math, they do not ever take the child out of math. They often see children before school care and after school care, so really maximizing the amount of hours that the child's at that location. So clinical visits, we have about, our data is indicating about 2.19 visits per child with 14 procedures per child during the school year. So the recall schedule is determined by the risk of that child. So the dentist is determining if they're very high risk, they want that child to be seen by the hygienist every other month to talk for repeat, right? They want to get the child from high risk down to medium, down to low. So it's diet counseling, communicating with parents, brushing techniques, all sorts of fabulous things. And then again, the child receives a recommendation of either ongoing care at the school site or going to the dentist for restorative care and then coming back to be maintained at the school site in the future. We have conducted satisfaction surveys, and the parents are very satisfied with this on-site care. What they are frustrated with is that if a child has extensive dental disease, they want the dentist to come to the school too. Because again, it's those same barriers are still in place. So the satisfaction is not low for any other reason except for that. School administrators are very satisfied. They love how convenient this is. They love that it's convenient for their families and their students. They do note reduced time away from school, and again, as I mentioned, the dental IQ of the staff, the parents, and faculty increases. We've also surveyed our providers, and generally, they are very appreciative of the opportunity to expand their practices and expand their reach into the community. They understand, or the professionals, the oral health professionals that we work with, understand that the barriers are in place getting people to their office. So they're really excited about this opportunity to reach further in. And they report enjoying the challenge of a new practice setting. That it, again, it's not just the screen with a flashlight and a tongue blade, hand off a referral, that it's actually robust care happening on site. And they like the idea of the interprofessional experience. This is new, this is exciting to them. They like that it's a continuum of care, not just, again, that screen and refer. They're very happy with it. So this is one of our little students down in San Ysidro. Her grandmother was totally indentulous. Her mom was working. She wasn't able to take time off. The grandmother didn't drive. So here we have this situation that's just so challenging. And we've got the dental hygienist there, and everyone's happy. And what we have are children who are excited to see their dental friends from the preschool age and then moving on up. We also have the opportunity to work with preschoolers, and then in LAUSD we've done this where we've moved on to the K and first grade, so following children along the way as they move from kindergarten or from preschool through. So we had Kira, I think, had mentioned about the development of coalition. You did a great job, so I won't go into that idea, but really about who to have at the table. And I think I work in a dental school. I'm a unique person in that I am public health only. I don't put my hands in people's mouths. And I'm not a hygienist. So my kind of continuous thread of conversation is I don't really have any skin in this game. I don't have a practice bias. I really don't. I am all about public health, and it is a moral dilemma. It's not actually a moral dilemma. It's a moral tragedy that we are actually watching dentistry debate about the solutions to this. And I really do think public health has to step up and be leaders in this and eliminate the bias, the scope bias, the challenges. We're about 20 years behind health in dentistry, so the whole idea of mid-level providers like nurse practitioners is very inflammatory still. So I really want to encourage you to think about colleagues that how you have in the public health departments, state leaders, health leaders, school nurses are amazing allies, and other school leaders, and then dentists and dental hygienists, and really continue to push that it's a public health dilemma. So when I think about how, if I were in your shoes and in a state that was looking or working with populations that were similar to what we've experienced, I would really be looking to develop a pilot project. That's what we have done. And part of the success of that is you're able to gather data from small, right, and we all know what that does, from small groups, and you're not kind of raising a red flag. You can keep this in a discrete population. What we found is that we can keep 65% of children healthy in the school setting. And that is even, in some of our schools, we're seeing higher rates, so it's 70 to 75. It really depends on if a family's drinking, in some cases it's drinking fluoridated water. They might live in a community that where there's fluoridated water, but they might have a cultural artifact where they don't ever drink water from a tap. So they're losing that preventive, protective factor. And I think it's really important, again, gather allies, gather the right allies. And one thing that we did a lot, and I can talk to my colleague, Dr. Paul Glassman, is back there. We hosted more site visits than you can imagine. And I laugh, I'm like, we're all little touch and feel. We're like preschoolers. But it works because then people can see, they go to a community and they can see how there are no service providers here. And is this, watchful neglect acceptable? And what we found is that people say, no, it's not. And then you kind of change hearts and minds that way. So let's see what else. Next steps. I certainly would be remiss if I didn't say that there are a lot of regulations and policies and protocols to trudge through. But it's important as you determine your allies and figure out your roadmap to get people who are good at these other areas. So regulatory policies, scope of practice change, if that will be part of your work. And then also really looking at providers, this is a bit of a game changer, who are valuing dental health, not valuing surgical procedures. Surgical procedures don't treat the disease. They treat it once. You will likely come back for more. The whole thing about oral health is the paradigm shift. It's a chronic disease. 30 years ago, we used to do cardiac surgery. People would come back 5 years later and need the same surgery. The health industry started looking at things differently, it was actually considered inadequate. And if we try to do that now, it wouldn't work. Now, if someone's going in for cardiac surgery, they're having discussions with nutritionists. They're having major behavior change supports happen around them. The same thing has to happen with dental health. You cannot and should not do surgery alone. You need to have other people to help a family change their behaviors and knowledge and attitudes, right? So again, I really encourage you to think about if you're here and this is interesting to you, get activated. And it's really about, again, convening allies who are prepared to disrupt the status quo. In many states, I know someone was here from Oregon, I can't recall who, but that's really, Oregon is on the cutting edge. Colorado, there are certain states who are recognizing the access to care issue cannot be ignored anymore. So I encourage you to find allies to help you disrupt the status quo, because this neglect is just completely unacceptable. Here's some resources that are available to you that have lots of different ideas around community-based care and oral health service ideas that are innovative and creative. And thank you. And I would be happy to talk with anyone if you have questions. I should have put our website up. It's very simple. It's virtualdentalhome.org. It's got lots of data. We have a cute video, which is, a 3-minute, it's on YouTube, it's on our website, but it also gives that kind of indication or just that bite size of how this works. And yeah, that's it. So thank you.